Hello and welcome to the official Robcast podcast. I'm your host, Rob, and this is my podcast. All right, and welcome back to the Robcast podcast. I'm your host, Rob, and today is a very special podcast day. It is the first podcast that I've done in years. Many of you, I'm sure, are wondering why I even decided to stop. And it wasn't because I ran out of things to say or things to think about. I should have prepared an answer, because I don't actually have one. Put me on the spot, why don't you? I just didn't do the podcast. You know, other things came up. You know, I got very involved in helping to start a theater company. There's no excuse, really. I mean, now I'm using this as an excuse to list off accomplishments that I've had in the past few years, but let's be honest, there's no excuse for not sitting down for 20 minutes a week and doing the Robcast podcast, and I apologize to my viewers. I apologize again because they're not viewers, they're listeners. And I apologize for those of you who are deaf and who are viewers because it has been transcribed into words, which wouldn't have been by me. So I don't know how you would have come across this podcast. So let's just cut to it. Cut to what, you say? Well, I don't know. I used that expression to get myself out of rambling. Oftentimes, as I may have mentioned before, I start speaking without actually knowing where I'm going. And sometimes, for me, that becomes a problem, not in life, but when I'm acting, for instance, because the words have already been written for me. So it's not actually coming up with something to say and not knowing how you're going to say something. It's literally trying to forget that you know exactly what you're going to say and then saying it as if you're saying it for the first time. Now, I know some of you may say, yes, but Rob, there are infinite alternate realities, and in each reality, there's a reality where we do know exactly what we're going to say, and we've lived this life already, and we all have past lives, and we're many bodies and one soul. And to that I would tell you, you may be right. And if that's your instinct to think that, then trust your instinct, trust your gut, because maybe our gut instinct isn't some sort of survival mechanism. Maybe it's actually an infinite ancient wisdom that we all carry because we've all lived this life over and over and over again, you know, like the Buddhists believe or some other religions, in reincarnation. And if that's so, then is our life fated? Is our existence predetermined? Is there a grand design? Is there a plan for us all? I had this interesting epiphany last weekend. I believe it was last weekend, yes. It was Friday, Fish Friday, right, because I was served salmon. And it wasn't necessarily a Catholic household, but it was delicious nonetheless, I digress. I was over at my friend's, shall I name them? I guess I could name them. I was over at my friend's Nathan and Elisha's house, and we were talking about, you know, that voice that comes up, whether it's a jealousy voice or something like, oh, you know, oh, he just got a text message, better take a look and see if it's another girl, you know, trying to move in on my man, or, you know, oh, this, you know, I have to, you know, position myself for this, because it's that voice that that kind of guides us and sometimes can help us and sometimes can hurt us depending on what actions we take from listening to it. And I really thought about it for about 4 seconds, and I thought, you know, maybe what that voice is that it's, ooh, I did the is, but it's not because I wasn't in the moment. My friend Al has this theory that when someone says what it is, it means they're not in the moment. It means they're taking something that they've already thought about, and they're just reinserting it, almost like a true life cut and paste. And I think that he has a point to that, because what it is I did that on purpose. I bailed on the joke. Sorry. I digress. I could probably cut and paste all the times that I've said I digress and put them into a song. Like, it could be the backbeat. I digress, 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 I digress. Boop! It would be like, you know, a techno song from, like, Berlin in the 80s. So, I was thinking that perhaps that voice is actually maybe a part of our DNA, or maybe a part of our brain. Now, originally I thought it was a part of our brain, and then I spoke to my friend Paul about my whole theory, and he said, oh yes, well, that theory has been talked about before, but it's been used different words, and I'll get into that later. Get into that later as if I've got a plan. Which brings me to the fact that what is the purpose of human life? Now, forget about animal life, mammalian, reptilian, whatever. What is the purpose of human life? Well, the purpose of human life is to, in tandem, survive and propagate. So if our life is about survival and propagation, and if you break it down even further, it's survival to propagate, and then the propagation becomes survival of the species. So it goes from the self to the many. But the important part is that I don't think that that part of our brain understands self and other. I think it's a little more rudimentary than that. So if we think about it in the sense that, oh geez, what? Oh, GarageBand has changed, and now it's timing this in measures, not in time, so I actually have no idea how long I've been speaking for. You know what? It's okay. I'm just gonna keep speaking for an extended period of time, which is what this podcast is about. It's a channel for me to speak in a soothing voice to all my listeners or viewers out there. So I will name this particular, I'll call it the part of the brain. I call it the SP brain, for survival propagation. So I thought, you know, that voice inside of your head that's like, oh, you better check that text message from, you know, that your man might be texting with a girl. It's all about survival and propagation. And it's not because of any other. entity or any other person, that part of your brain does not understand other. So therefore, there is no real competition. There is only the objective to survive and the objective to propagate. So in a sense, any sort of competitive nature which is displayed in nature or in human behavior is purely ancillary to the very direct part of ourselves that must survive and must propagate. Because let's face it, there's a mechanism in us, whether it's in our DNA or whether it's in our brain, the SP, that is simply, I must not die, I must spread humanity, I must have children, and men and women are needed to do this. So perhaps she sensed that her survival propagation was in danger because she wasn't able to propagate with her mate because her mate was engaged in something else. And that something else may or may not be engaging with another mate, which is, I think, where jealousy comes from. Actually, I think it's where every single emotion, thought, and action comes from. I think you can boil it all down to the SP part of the brain. And I think that because I've thought about it for a week and that's what I've decided. No, I'm still fleshing out this theory. And it's a very delicate process because I don't want to start jumping to any conclusions. But at this point, using the very limited logic that I have, I can sort of boil it down to that essence. So if you think about, you know, back when we were cavemen and cave women, we really needed that part of the brain. We really needed the SP because there were saber-toothed tigers and we needed to survive and we needed to propagate because the human race, the human species, was not yet as abundant as it is now. Now, we know that there are almost 8 billion people in this world, and studies have shown that it will top out at about 12 billion. People think that it'll just get exponentially larger and larger, but that won't actually happen because people are dying at a rate faster than people are being born, which is true. And then the birth rate will catch up to the death rate, so therefore it will top out at around 8 billion. And we also, most of us, now I don't want to assume because I know, look, I know that there are war-torn countries, I know that there are impoverished communities. I mean, look, I live in Los Angeles where there are an estimated 40,000 homeless people, but I'll get to that later. The other main thing about propagation survival is searching for food. So now we are in an abundance of food. We have a surplus of food. You can go to a grocery store and you can choose whatever you want, whatever season you want, and have it almost immediately. You can even call up a phone number and say, "Hey, Amazon Fresh, deliver me groceries." Or you could even go a step further and call a Thai restaurant or a pizza restaurant and say, "Deliver me food that's already prepared and made and hot, and I'm going to eat it." That's my main function, is going to be eating the food. I'm not going to catch the food. I'm not going to hunt for the food. I'm not going to prepare the food. I'm just going to eat the food. So you take out those processes of human nature, and you get further and further from the function of perhaps what the SP brain is. Now, survival, yes, I understand that there are times in our lives, and for some people, there are many moments, in fact, maybe one could argue all of the moments of their lives are simply about survival. We still have that function because it's still necessary. We still need it. It gives us the wherewithal. It helps us with the fight or flight, you know. Whether we come into a situation and we say, I think I can manage this situation, or I think I have to back down from this situation. My point is that we still have this for a reason. Now, the reason I say that is because what Paul was talking about, and I think it was something a little bit similar, it's overlapping, but it's not exactly what I'm talking about. This gentleman named Alan Buchanan wrote a book, and I can't recall the name of it right now, but he uses a term in that book called the plasticine hangover. And what he means by that is, you know, back when we were cavemen and cavewomen, there was a requirement for making sure that we have, you know, salt and sugar and fats, because we would have to fast for long periods of time. We didn't know when the next time we were going to get food was. So nature has used these, enticers in a way, these flavor-enhancing enticers to make us eat those things in order for us to survive. Now, what happens? You flip the script. That's the wrong term. You fast forward all of these years, and what is the function of salt and sugar? It's simply pleasure now. I mean, we don't need it because we have as many nutrients as we want. We can even take nutrients in pill form, as what's the guy who made that synthesizer? Kurzweil, right? He apparently only takes supplements. He stopped eating for a prolonged period of time. I don't know if that's exactly true, but I watched a Netflix documentary about 3 years ago, so I have a little fuzzy memory of it. And I don't mean fuzzy like, oh, warm and fuzzy. I mean, it's hazy at best. Ray Kurzweil, is that his name? Let me just turn my head 67 degrees. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's Ray Kurzweil. What I did when I turned my head 67 degrees was I looked at my bookshelf, and I have a book. Jeez, I had to do it again because I wanted to make sure I got the title right, called The Singularity Is Near by Ray Kurzweil. Now, I'm telling you that to impress you. I've never read it. In fact, I believe that about 90% of the words on that shelf have not been glanced by my eyes. I'm sorry to say, no, I have not read East of Eden. No, I have not yet read The Confederacy of Dunces. No, I have not gotten through all of Robert Browning's poems. Okay, I'll stop trying to impress you. You being me. Because really, when we talk to others, we're simply talking to ourselves. That's another subject, and let's parking lot that conversation. I learned that from a person who knows a lot more about communication than I do. We're going to parking lot that conversation, which I like, because it feels like, you know, you're talking to a kindergarten class, and sometimes I like being treated like I'm in kindergarten so that I know exactly what I'm supposed to do and I calm down. So going back to this SP, I believe, this is my theory, that what has happened is that SP part of our brain has, for lack of better words, mutated. And I think that the mutation sort of predicates, that's the wrong word. The mutation sort of that imbibes the way that as individuals we survive in this world. So we're no longer utilizing that part of the brain by running from saber-toothed tigers or by hunting and gathering for food. So that part of the brain is still active, and it must be utilized in a different manner. Now I got to thinking, well, every human survives in one way or another. And what I mean by survive is simply, and maybe this is a morbid way of looking at it, but I started doing this exercise, what would have to be taken away in my life in order for me to not want to live anymore? It's almost like a morbid example of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? But let's break it down. We'll categorize it. So occupationally, well, the scientist survives by learning as much as he or she can about nature, about science, and how this world works, or how, the human body or animal bodies work. There's all sorts of science in that, or chemicals, or alchemy, or anything that has to do with, a natural occurrence, or a natural state, or natural objects that you can theorize and more or less prove. The doctor. Now that gets more specific to the human body, and there's animal doctors too. They're veterinarians, but they learn as much as they can about the human body, and they know how to fix it. So that is their survival mechanism. They are, they go about that. The politician, right? They survive on power, whether it is to influence change over the masses or whether it's to make sure that they are the ones on the right side, so to speak. They want to utilize power and influence. The banker or any sort of financial position, any sort of occupation, really, when it boils down to it, because collectively humans have decided that currency is power. We put a value onto currency, onto money. So the banker survives through amassing as much money as he or she can. So you get my drift. The artist survives on imagination, on continuing to tell stories, on expression, on beauty, right? And you can, subcategorize the painter, the writer, the director, the actor, the cinematographer, the photographer, the musician, Now, we get into that, and not only is that mechanism, sort of rolling onto itself, the survival propagation. We look at ideas as well. Well, the survival of ideas is it has to happen through communication and through human to human. Nothing survives unless it is passed down, right? So that's why artists tell stories, but that's also why religion is. I mean, propagation is used a lot of times when we're expressing ideas and religious beliefs and things like that. It comes down to the fact that a lot of people in this world think that there is only one way, and their way is the way, and they want to communicate that to others and say, look, I want to propagate this to you that, if you don't do this, you won't get into heaven, and heaven is a place that's great, and you want to get into heaven, so you should do this. Or, hey, look, we all have many lives and you're going to be reborn, but you should really, pray or chant because you want to burn the karma from whatever past lives you've had. And so propagation of ideas, propagation of religions, propagation of philosophy, you know, it's why there are still copies printed of Plato's Republic and all sorts of other books, Descartes, and, you know. So what we get into is the fact that we don't necessarily, and we absolutely still do. I don't want to say that we don't, but this gets us into gray area because, it gets me into gray area because it allows me to quote-unquote sympathize with my enemy. Now, I can understand how a fascist would be utilizing his or her SP part of their brain when they think that this world would survive by only having, you know, the Aryan race on it. I can understand how that's a survival mechanism for them, because in their eyes, you continue with the strongest gene, and in their sort of point of view, the Aryan gene is the strongest gene. So that's what they want to propagate, and that's what they want to have survive. Now, in the same way that a serial killer, for instance, survives on power and control over humans and information, really, if you look at that, you know, psychologically. So because we no longer have to utilize that part of our brain simply for survival and for copulation, we transform it, which is why, you know, I believe there are, gay people and transgendered people and things like that. They don't necessarily have the SP part of their brain saying, oh, I need to make a baby or I need to do this. It's more like, this is the way I can survive, because what if I'm, a man trapped inside of a woman's body? Well, the way that I can survive is by utilizing the, the tools that I have to live life as the opposite gender. You know, so we get into that, and I start thinking individualistically, so what is my SP? How do I survive? You know, and that's what I've really trying to nail down. But at the same time, I don't want to nail it down. I just want to sort of ruminate on it. You know what I mean? Because what I think this theory, or you could even call it a tool, what this is really good for, is for conflict resolution, right? You get yourself into a situation and you think, why is this happening? Well, let's strip it down to the SP. So let's say, I don't know, I'm going to make something up and it may not work, so bear with me. Let's say, I'll use this as an example. We'll talk about this. Melania Trump, right? So the way I believe that Melania Trump started her SP was through her beauty and through her intellect. And she knew, by the way that this world works, is that men appreciate beauty, and certain men can survive off of power, therefore she can attract a male who is powerful and rich and can take care of her, and she can, you know, survive from that. Now, what happens when, she's unsure of, oh goodness, my computer just alerted me, Valentine's Day tomorrow. Thanks, computer. I really need to know that. Okay. Because she knows that, you know, a powerful man can attract other women around him, so what's the next thing to do to survive? To literally propagate, to have a child with that man, to bond them, and in a lawful sense, really be provided because of alimony and child support and things like that. You know, you're going to be taken care of, even if you're no longer with the gentleman. Now, what happens when that gentleman, I shouldn't call him a gentleman, when that man wants more and more power and his mate might not necessarily want to go along that ride? Well, her survival propagation becomes internal, and it becomes about protecting herself and protecting her child and staying away from the man who she copulated with to have that child, right? So our SPs can change. Our SPs can change through life. And I think that, you know, people who are conscious, people who are aware of their SPs, are constantly in a state of uncertainty. You know, the homeless person, I think that they're a lot more in touch with their basic animal instincts of survival and propagation. I think, because it's that sort of thing of, where do I sleep tonight? How do I get food today? How do I keep myself safe and warm and healthy and alive? That sort of thing. And maybe to them, you know, the salty, sweet plasticine aspect is not the hangover, but it's the main event, you know. Which is why, you know, this part of our brain or DNA hasn't gone, it's the way of the gallbladder, so to speak. Like, why do we have this? We know why we have this. And we can boil it down to any thought, any feeling that we have. It all goes back to the SP, right? So I think about this and I think, oh, well, this is a valuable tool. This is a nice theory. But let's not get ahead of ourselves, Rob, because you don't want to go sympathizing with your adversaries or sympathizing with the enemy, because that can get dangerous, can't it? Because then you start thinking about things like, I can understand why Trump would want to ban all these Muslims, and I can understand why, because his survival technique is to have power and control over the human population, and this is the way he knows it through his, tiny pea brain. And I'm sorry that I'm not going to apologize. The man's stupid, or maybe he's very smart. Either way, that was a cop out. But he at least has very smart people around him, and pretty scary people, like, you know, being able to understand and sympathize with Bannon or Spicer. I mean, God, Spicer's survival technique is literally spinning. He's treading water and he spins. I mean, geez, the man should just, you know, sign up to be a spin cycle teacher, because he can really spin with the best of them. He literally just spins anything the president says and makes it the gospel. You know, the president's longstanding belief has been, well, the president's belief has always been, it's like, dude, just say the president is an idiot and he doesn't understand how the world works. I digress. So what we're talking about can sort of apply to you know, the enemy, so to speak, but I also can understand in a way how, let's say, the environmentalist is actually inherently selfish. Now, the environmentalist says, I want the world to survive. We need to save the planet. We need to make sure that, you know, that the planet will still be there, and we don't take away X, Y, and Z and destroy this and that. Well, actually, the only reference that the environmentalist has is towards humanity or towards the animal population. So what they're really saying is we need to make sure that the planet is livable for us in order for us to survive. Because I will tell you, the planet will survive with the human race or without the human race. So environmentalists aren't really about the planet. They're about survival, human survival. And they can ascertain, using scientific fact, that the human race may not survive if the planet changes too rapidly and the polar ice caps melt and all of our coastal cities go underwater, all that sort of stuff. So when you start to sort of strip everything down and realize that, you know, everything is a tool towards survival and propagation, it kind of allows you to slow down a little bit. And I was talking to some friends. I was over for dinner last night. Seems like I'm always over at friends' house for dinner. That's because I never have people over here for dinner. Maybe I should. I'm a great cook. You know, but she was saying how emotion is a valuable tool as much as thought is, because it, you know, alerts us to something, and how we feel about something is very important. You know, we could have all of these facts of, you know, oh, the current administration is doing this, X, Y, and Z. They're not letting Muslims into the country. They're putting a fascist in the National Security Council, blah, blah, blah. But if we don't have feelings about it, if we don't have anger opinions, then there will be no change, right, from within us and within the community. So emotion and feelings, what she was saying, is really a valuable tool. And I think that all goes back to the SP, you know, survival propagation. I'm going to wrap this up for now because A, I don't know how long I've been talking for, and B, I think that I'm going to give some time for digestion of thought, digestion for whatever's going on in your life, and I wish you a very prosperous and happy day. Thank you very much. We're out.
Well, that's all the time we have today at Robcast Podcast. Be sure to tune in every week to find the latest Robcast Podcast at officialrobcast.podomatic.com. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter at officialrobcast. Thanks so much for listening. Stay alive.